I'm louder than you, so.
Approximately 140 students a year. Yes, he's teaching middle school students for over a decade and is in his third year of using 2.0 applications in 21st century learning classes. Despite the fact, or more realistically, because of the fact that math is one of those subjects students often reflect back on with distaste, fear, or indifference, Chris has moved from teaching both social studies and math to the one subject. He has been involved in the development of the middle years math curriculum at the divisional and provisional level. With a strong focus on conceptual understanding, Chris has discovered that using 2.0 tools and applications make math fun and interesting. An encouraging trend has emerged. Students do not run away and say, I hate math. They love to do assignments and have started to see the beauty in math. So I welcome Chris Harvick from Winnipeg School District in Canada.
Thank you. Okay, I have to actually turn on my watch to 10-minute interval timer because I'm verbose. So it's going to beep and then I'm officially on the clock. Okay. Go back. Stop beeping. There we go. Sort of feel like the bionic man here with all this stuff. Hi, I'm from Canada, and it's very pretty here. Went for a run yesterday over there somewhere, and it was hot and sticky, and then the thunder shower came. It's been really cold where I come from, so it's really nice to actually encounter some warmth this year. This is me in my two lesser roles. I do the odd bit of public speaking. I've been known to be Cupid and the reading fairy around school. But more importantly, I'm just an ordinary math teacher. I teach 140 students every year, grade 8 math in Canada, which is very similar to your grade 6, grade 7 curriculum down here. Okay? I teach math. That's all I teach. I'm not a computer teacher. I teach math. Thank goodness. It's just one of those great things that you get to do. This is where Winnipeg is. It's right in the center of North America. You take a dart, you throw it right to the center of North America, and poof, you're going to hit Winnipeg, Manitoba. Actually, I think it's Minot, North Dakota, but it's Winnipeg. This is how close we are. We're only 2,500 kilometers apart. It's one quick flight on United 5880 to Chicago. Sit down in that F terminal on the bottom there, wait for 3 hours, and promptly they take you to Allentown. It was very nice coming this way. May my trip home be as quick because I'm expected at school at 9 o'clock in the morning. Please, no overbooking. All right. Winnipeg, known for snow. I noticed that there are lots of areas here for drainage. I guess you get rain. I don't know if you get this much snow. But, you know, minus 40 in the winter. You know, kids like to curl up with their math books a lot in Winnipeg. Not. But we do have lots of other bonuses. There is a lake and a beach within an hour anyway you go. This is Victoria Beach, where I'm going to be in exactly 4.5 days for 3 weeks of absolute non-electronic bliss. Every piece of electronics gets left at home. And we're going to go up there, and those are my two little rats throwing sticks into the water. How I got into this game, or the talk that I'm going to give you today, is because of this man. His name is Darren Kiropatwa, and he's a math teacher too, only a math teacher. And he uses social networks, what kids use, Facebook and all that stuff, to get kids to do math in different ways. 2005 he introduced me. 2008 is now. It's like dog years, though. It feels like I've been doing this for 21 years with all the changes that have been going on in between. You can find me at either one of these two places or just Google me on the web, and I come up pretty quick. The first one is my classroom hub, and the second one is my own personal blog, which I haven't done much because I've been preparing this. If you want to know more information about all the stuff that we do, or that I do, K-12 Online Conference is a free online conference every year. That's how your folks found me. I was lucky enough to be a presenter last year, and my presentation was called Release the Hounds. And oddly enough, I created a voice thread for this, all about this beautiful pedagogical stuff that I'm doing, and all I get are school kids going to the first picture here going, what a cute lab, I love the lab. You know, they don't see any of the pedagogical content after it, which is what it was created for, but at least they like the dogs. So it's free. It happens again this year. This year it's going to be really good because the strands that they have are for beginners, for people that have been doing it for a while, and for experts. So there's something for everybody. Totally archived the previous 2 years. They're there as well. So I think if it says K12onlineconference.org. There is a wiki that is along with this where all of my notes are and the slides and everything else. That'll have all live links for you. Just go click and poof, you'll be there. Damn! Oh! I ripped my pants, Mom! Oh, damn, that was a good bit of breakfast this morning. How you say things really changes what students hear from you. And I guess this is what I'm trying to get across today. What you are saying, what message does the way you teach convey to your students? This is the only one that doesn't work. Yeah. Sorry. Techno glitch. Look at that, I'm at the end already. Sorry. All my other ones were fine. Sorry.
TV sucks the brain right out of the skull. So, next seminar will improve the content of television.
Professor McClure,
of course, the content of television is foolish, but the message of television is what it does to us, the users.
Are you saying that the medium is more important than the message it carries?
No. The medium is not more important than the message. It's obvious. The medium is the message.
Medium is the message. What does that mean?
Well, of course, the medium is the message. It's what I...
Oh, that's a great idea.
When print changed the shape of the world,
you never read newspapers again, only or bad.
Has the medium changed the way the world thinks about communications?
Is the message, then the content must be the audience. And of course, electronic information is turning the world into a global village. Take light bulbs, they're an information medium that...
That was a Historica Foundation is Charles Bronfman. They owned Seagram's, Crown Royal. They gave a lot of money to the history people, and they've created these little shorts. But that is Marshall McLuhan, a Canadian English professor. And if you're older than 30 and remember anything from the 60s, he was pretty popular back then. He was on the Today Show and a whole bunch of other things. But his big thing was talking about how TV was going to change the world, this big communication revolution. And as I studied him a little bit more, I was going, holy smokes. Like, what he was talking about in the 70s is what's happening now, but on steroids. So a little bit more about McLuhan. He was born in 1911. Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, and then actually moved to Winnipeg, where I'm from, and went to high school at Kelvin High School. This is Kelvin in the 1950s, where I went to high school. Just figure that one out. University of Manitoba, and then went to Cambridge and took a couple of degrees over there before the University of Toronto actually created a center of communications for him, where he actually started teaching communications. And one of his big things was this, the medium is the message, right? The medium being an extension of ourselves, like a wheel would be under our feet or a hammer in our arms, right? And that the message is the change or the scale of pace, the pattern this new invention or innovation introduces into human affairs. Just how quickly is this going to change everything? So what new mediums have you added to your classroom to change your message? Well, here is our glorious scribe, Mesopotamia, right? 2500 BC. all that time ago. And there he is sitting doing homework because Mesopotamians invented homework. Thank you, Mesopotamians. And he's sitting there with his little stylus writing in his clay tablet. And how much has changed between that and that textbook in the bottom there? I'd have to say not very much. You know, how much antiquated computers do you have in your school not doing anything when perhaps they can be doing something? Have you tried using a smart board or a Promethean since they're next door with your students? You know, this is my classroom. Luckily, it's a double classroom. It used to be an old metal lab. That floor is original 1948 veneer with 1,500 layers of wax on top of it. We actually have approval to rebuild it, but we'll see what happens. That might be by 2020. But that's where I teach, and I can do some pretty amazing things. In the back there, you'll see my computer lab, the oldest computers in the school. It's like there's that picture in the desert of all those airplanes that get retired. Well, this is where they retire all the computers in my school. They all come to me, and they sit there, and whenever they die, we, you know, hit the little form, and it goes off to the requisition to be recycled in the appropriate way. You know, the evolution of man goes from, you know, sort of hunched over on four legs and all the way back to hunched over on the keyboard now. Stop beeping. I want you to think about the cell phone, mobile communications. I'm sure every single one of you has one in your pocket right now. Going through the airport, the amount of BlackBerries that you see compared to 3 years ago is astonishing, and on July 11th, when the G3 hits and the new iPhone comes out, I'm sure that there will be even more people out there being mobile all the time and communicating this way. But here's a World War II phone. Gross Point Blank, I don't know if you've seen it. John Cusack, well, the movie was based on the year I graduated high school from, so it always hits a note. But here is his cell phone. And now, this isn't the picture I really wanted for this one there, but you see kids riding down the street now on their bike with their fingers hitting their keyboards all the time. They just use these cell phones all the time, and yet you walk into a school, and how many of you have one of these policies where those cell phones have to be locked up in a pocket? Don't you dare see them at all. You know, they're personal data gathering devices. You know, how much money does the school division spend on cell phone or digital cameras every year, when every single kid has one in their pocket? The Pew Internet Survey, it's been out, it's online, and I've circled the little piece that I want. This is the percent who have done at least one of all of these activities. Send, receive text messages, take a picture, play a game, receive an email, access the internet, record a video, play music, send, receive instructions. Now it goes from ages 65 to 18. So 9% have at least done one of those if you're older than 65. I think that's changing. 50 to 64, 23%. Doubles again when you hit 30 to 49. Here you have 73% of kids, 18 to 29, adults, 18 to 29. Now, they don't have a under 18 category, but I'm sure that you can assume from the math that you're seeing there that it's probably not 100, but I would say it's more than 90% of kids have done something here, right? They use these tools, like they are hardwired from birth to use them now. It's us, the older folk, that aren't. Now, a medium is anything from which change emerges. Anything. And at the rate of pace of change right now, you know, new mediums are coming out all the time. You know, all ideas and innovation are what McLuhan would call media or mediums. Everything, every single change that's out there. All of this I got from a guy named Mark Federman, who actually works for the McLuhan Center, and for me to use that, I need to show you this slide to say that he's more brilliant on McLuhan than I am, and thank you for your essay, Mark, because it got me through that first bit. So I want to talk to you about the 1970s and today. Here we have the oil embargo of the 1970s, and here is what I think probably you paid last month for gasoline. Guy on the plane says it's $6 a gallon up in Canada. No, I don't know. I bought it at 28 cents a liter when I first started driving, and now it's $1.60 something or $1.36 a liter. So I don't know. I just sort of go, I ride my bike, thank you. You know, there were really cool tools and or toys in the 70s. You know, Lincoln Logs, Lego. Oh, it was a great time. And here is the new phenomenon that was just making us really happy. You know, sitting down on the comfy chair, watching Dick Cavett and enjoying life. What implications did that have for education? All this new communication technology coming into play. Television, it's huge. You know, what were the fears that teachers had back in the 1970s when all of this new communication was rushing in? Well, I think it was the same fear that we have now with all the new technology that's walking in front of us. How are we going to teach what we want to teach when we have all this other clutter messing up our lessons? Well, you know, fear is a very important thing. We need to harness it, use it, and transform ourselves into something that will allow us to use what kids already have in their back pockets and in their brains to make them better students. You know, the medium is the message. It's an extension. Anything that you can use to extend your classroom, to make kids learn in different ways, to make them want to learn, is going to get the job done.
As John said, books are still very important, but their role is changing. The nature of their importance.
Can you hear that?
Remember that books were our first teaching machine, and during the Renaissance, our only teaching machine. The books are what gave the Renaissance its peculiar state. We had to see the world and each other through the printed line on the page. And today, there are many media of information, many teaching machines. By teaching machines, I take it that you're not referring only to those found in the classroom. No. We learn everywhere. The books were always diminished because of all the other actors. It's no longer king, but subject. We all loved to the book, the assembly line, the last production line, for example, comes to us from the book, from the printed line, where things move along and happen one at a time. But the assembly line has changed. It is no longer one thing at a time, but wherever possible, everything at once. 40 or 50 operations happening at the same time, controlled and synchronized exactly by preset type tape. Notice the shift in the image. The assembly line stretched out, events taking place one at a time, to the modern automated industrial complex, where things happen all at once. Bang. Not a line, but a field. And this applies not only to products, but to people. The line, the individual, the event, was the book, the field, the all at once, tribal drum, the new media.
He's talking about changes in the 1970s to how we're going to have to educate kids to get them out of working in, you know, to not be this guy at the board banging his, you know, the image that pops into my head is Ben Stein and Ferris Bueller, you know, Bueller, voodoo, economics, you know, having them sitting in rows, you know, rooted in the way that we were taught, right? We sat in rows, we had our textbooks, we had our worksheets, the teacher gave us three examples, and we did a worksheet. You know, here are the rows. The rows were built, right, to condition us to work in factories, right? To get us ready to have our place on the line to put the widget on the wadget. You know, how many factory jobs are going to be left in North America in 10 years? Almost all of them are being outsourced off-continent, you know? Whether it's at a cheese factory, and I think this one is a Walmart distribution center, most of this stuff is being outsourced somewhere. So why do we need to be training kids to be really good at this, when perhaps we need to train them to be really good at something else? And he was saying in the 1970s, kids are starting already to be programmed differently. Okay, well, that's 30 years ago. 30 years. A long time ago.
Well, now, what about the future? I know you suggest that we're always behind ourselves in realizing what's going on.
We're always living a way ahead of our thinking, yes.
What about an educational procedure, then, which will
satisfy all of the senses that are now not being satisfied by youngsters in school.
Isn't the answer bigger?
Squirrels, for example.
No. And bigger populations of school children seem automatically to call for larger school spaces. But the sort of dialogue among all the elements of our world that is going on actually and without benefit of bureaucratic blessing or any official blessing, the kind of exchanges and interchanges of imagery and awareness of peoples of the world, this is the pattern I think that education will tend to resort to more and more. Instead of locating people, for example, in a particular space to teach them, say, German or Chinese, they will be moved to Germany or China to learn those things, by circuitry or physically. Physically. Or they could be moved by circuitry. But as far as that goes, in our own world, we are hurrying back and forth across town at morning and night to situations which we could quite easily encompass by closed circuit. Why do the wheels keep hurrying us downtown? Some people are puzzled by this and have come up with the answer. It's the filing cabinet downtown in the offices that makes it still necessary to rush back and forth from suburb to office. That it is this obsession with the contents of the file, documents, contracts, data. All of these materials actually could be just as available on closed circuit at home. The stockbroker long ago discovered this, that the telephone enables him to conduct his business anywhere. He doesn't have to hurry down to the stock exchange.
So the tycoon, like Paul Getty, who does most of his business by telephone.
But we still have this obsessional, compulsive drive to fit into patterns, to fit into classifications, which says our job is down here. That's why we're terrified when automation threatens to integrate us, so that all the old fragmentary jobs go back into a circuit. A wholeness.
But isn't that inevitable?
As circuitry has already brought this about
high tech
at many levels of our lives. And the applying of it to the industrialized areas of fragmented and specialist tasks of work is inevitable, yes, because it's already happening. You see, our marketing, for example, is way ahead of our production processes. As the speed gets faster, it's, I suppose, as if all the members of an orchestra began to play 1,000 times faster, but some only 100 times faster. You would get a crazy pattern, wouldn't you, in a big orchestra?
Always open. You know, when do students work best? Do they work best at that, 8 o'clock class that you have with them in the morning? I do. I love the morning. Like for me, give me 5 o'clock in the morning. Okay, not 5:30. Though the birds are up at 4:43, so 5:30. And I'm happy, but I like to be asleep before 11 when these kids are just actually turning on their brains, right? Why are they stuck coming to school all the time? And I'm, they have to, right? Like, we need to go off and work. We need our kids to be somewhere where they're safe. But, why are they enclosed in this space? Well, they have to be, and that's how we make our money. And we do them a very good service when they're at school. But are there ways that we can extend this? And I'd have to say yes. There are ways that you can extend the classroom without a lot of effort that allows it to be open 24 hours a day. You don't have to check it 24 hours a day, but your kids can use it 24 hours a day. You can put a chat box in at a classroom blog or a wiki where the kids can communicate with each other. Okay, I have a Skype box on mine. I've had one kid in 3 years actually use it. But underneath there's another little chat icon. All of this is free, where kids can communicate with each other, and the high school kids do it all the time. My middle school kids, I guess they're 13, 14 years old, do it all the time. And they're not talking about goofy things. Okay, you get some of that. But a lot of them, I don't know how to do question 15 in the homework. Can you help? And all of a sudden this chatter goes back and forth. And when is this happening? 10:30, 11, 1, when their brains are firing. Okay? As teachers, we need to be a conduit for all of this energy. We need to take their ideas and put it through us and harness it and to give them the knowledge that they need. Sometimes we need to be a lightning rod to take that energy and let it hit us and absorb, and we can give it back. Like, once again, being in the classroom, not necessarily as the guy banging the wall saying 3 times 3 is 9, but saying, what can you tell me about 3 times 3? And the best way I can describe this, I think, is talking about fractions. Okay? I don't know one kid that loves learning fractions. Okay? I have allowed my kids to call fractions the mathematical F word. Because honest to goodness, it throws them. Fractions and rational numbers is a death blow for kids in grades 7 and 8 in Canada. It is a cornerstone of mathematics through, you know, high school, but holy smokes. And why is that? Why can fractions be so deadly? We all know how to do fractions. You know, why is it so deadly for kids to learn fractions? And there's a couple of things, right? You have to engage their preconceptions. Kids walk into your classrooms with a whole bunch of different ideas about fractions, right? They come up with ideas like, let's say, I'll even read this, right? Students come into the classroom with conceptions of numbers grounded in their whole number learning that lead them astray in the world of rational numbers. Example, multiplying always makes a number bigger. It does, unless you're a fraction. And then everything changes. Take the flip side, dividing makes everything smaller. It does, unless you're a fraction. The knowledge network, new concepts of numbers and new applications. So here they come in, right? What are the core ideas that define the domain of rational numbers? Anybody use Catherine Fosno's series at all? No? She's out of New York, and she writes a very interesting series of books. Fosno, F-O-S-N-O-T. The best $200 you'll ever spend for your classrooms. It'll teach fractions like nobody's business. But what it does, it really gets down to all those things that makes fractions ugly, right? Fractions are part of a whole. Fractions can show division. Fractions have an assumption that if I give you half a sandwich and you half a sandwich, you have the same half of a sandwich, whereas you have half a Kaiser bun and you have half of the party sub that, you know, somebody left over at the office. It's still half, but the wholes are different, right? What new understanding students will have to construct. So they walk in there, so you've got them at this stage. Where do you need to take them next? And this is just fractions, right? Rational numbers, decimals, percents. You know, and how does a beginning student come to understand rational numbers? Like how do you do that? Okay, I'd read this one, but that's too much text even for me. This one's talking about conceptual versus rote. You know, yours is not to reason why, just invert and multiply. Right? Johnny, I've tried to teach you 14 different ways. Just remember that, okay? And it'll get them through a certain point, but at some point in high school, they're going to have to understand what dividing fractions actually is doing. Right? Conceptually. So here we have today's students, all excited, ready for that 8:30 class. And I have him again.
We're in the process of making fun. For just as books and their private point of view are being replaced by the media, so the concepts which underlie our actions, our social life, are changing. We are no longer so concerned with self-definition, with finding our own individual way. What the group, we're more concerned with what the group knows, of feeling as it does, of acting with it, not apart from.
He's talking about the change in teenagers, 1960s to 1970s. His big change was talking about the Bobby Sox set of the, I don't know, I'm going to date myself here, I don't know. But, you know, Frankie and Annette going to the beach movies, and these new kids now that are hooked on TV, okay? And everything he's talking about there completely changes the minute you hit the year 2000, right? The millennials show up, right? Before, the big joke used to be how many adults can't use the remote control to program the VCR. Well, when was the last time you even heard the word VCR used? Right? But that was a big joke at some point. Not anymore. These kids are born hardwired. Okay? Out of the crib, they're using, and hopefully not ruining with their Diet Coke, computers and cell phones. Right off the hop. Parents are giving kids cell phones so that they know where they are. Come home for dinner. Or a walkie-talkie, right? Mine was, Chris, come home for dinner! You know, she'd be screaming from the front step. Like, that's how I knew I had to come home, not a ring on a telephone. Kids multitask all the time. They can be on the cell phone, riding their bike, and typing on a computer all at the same time. They can. They multitask all the time. Sometimes they've got 14 different applications going all at once. They're hardwired. They can do this. We can't. One of Darren's kids in one of the presentations we had talked about Notebook 1.0, referring to the World Wide Web, the original World Wide Web of the 1990s. Right? Here you are using your notebook to, you know, write your notes. Well, what happened if you had a virtual manipulative notebook with gadgets, widgets, and widgets, right? Something that you can create that has more meaning because you're enjoying taking these notes or recreating something that you've done. This is where they like to play, not on the printed page. Okay, scribe posts, one of my presentations later today, are a way for you to do that. Kids will go out there and recreate their notes for you and create their own textbook of the course, their own study guide. All free. Doesn't cost 1 cent. 99.9% of it done at home, not on school time. You as a teacher, though, need to become a little bit more aware of all of this. You need to be more edupunk, like the guy on the right-hand side here. You know, not being afraid to walk around with a computer, not being afraid to use a computer. You need to be networked. You need to actually go out there and find like-minded people to teach you how to do this better. And the possibilities are endless. There are more social networks out there. Anybody use the Ning? Ning? Right? Like, there's one for every type. You know, math teaches of pre-Cal 6. There's a Ning for you where everybody who does that sort of goes around and they talk to each other. You can network. It's quite easy to do. One of McLuhan's big things is that the present is actually the past. We're so comfortable in the present because everything in the present is dealing with stuff that we've already done, and we're really comfortable with stuff that we've done before. Thinking ahead is hard. I was at a presentation of a guy named Arnold Wasserman, who is part of a think lab out of San Francisco. Singapore hired this man to redo their entire educational system from scratch. Singapore, one of the beasts of the East, right? Very, very powerful country. Hired him to recreate their educational system along with their people so that in 10 years from now, they'll have the brightest and the best students out there. Right? Not for now, but for 10 years from now. They want to be ready for that. You need to be willing to think that far ahead. You can connect with anybody, anytime, anywhere now. The world is shrinking and you know what's happening. McLuhan calls it his global village, and he talks about tribal drummers in Africa beating out that some princess is getting married to a prince, and we know because the drums say it, and then the next drums pass it along. Well, this is completely changed now. You know, you go to the internet and poof, it's there. But we can do a little history lesson here. Before I taught mathematics exclusively, I was grade 8 history, which means I got to teach world history, which for any of you that have ever had that opportunity, it's blood, it's guts, and it's every teenage boy's fantasy course. So it was the one course that I never had to work very hard at because here, look, more video game action. Oh, look, you know, swords, blood. But here are troubadours, Middle Ages. How do you get your information? Well, you only knew. Your world consisted of how far you could walk there and back in one day during daylight, because if you were caught out on the roads at night, you'd get knifed. So that's how far you knew. That was your worldview. to know anything else, these guys came by and they'd sing you a song about, you know, a ship sinking in the English Channel or whatever. That is how you got your news. Got a little bit better if you had one of these, right? Yeah, whatever. You want to come after me? I've got steel on my body. I've got a horse and a sword. So your world viewing, it was a little bit longer, you know, for maybe, let's say, 8 miles there and 8 miles back. Maybe now you could go 20 miles there and back. That's not a big circle. Proved a little bit more when, you know, sailing ships came along and we knew a little bit more about the world. But if that sailing ship ever lost sight of land, they weren't coming back because they didn't know how to read a compass. They followed the coastline. Trains gave us a little bit more information because now we can all hop on a train and actually go somewhere. You know, now like the entire country of England we could get to, you know, in a couple of days and see what was happening. We still didn't know what was happening in the New World, right? Most of this information now is coming through a newspaper, if you could read. Air travel improves things. We can go almost anywhere on the planet now. But the biggest change in communication happened in the 20th century with the radio and the television. And if you think about coverage of wars, World War I, World War II, on the radio, sitting around the radio, listening, reading the newspapers, photographs. Changed a little bit in Vietnam, where most of it was now broadcast through the TV. I think of the first Gulf War and how CNN changed that completely, where you would sit there and watch the breaking news and the live feeds all the time. And even that now is passé because the internet is instantaneous, and not only do you get mainstream media, but you get all that other media too, with people just sitting there. There was a kid in Egypt who was attending a protest, was somewhere where he wasn't supposed to be. The police were hauling him off. He quickly, on his cell phone, typed into his Twitter account, which is a social network, "Help being taken away." His buddies in his network called the consulate, who got on the phone and got this kid released quicker than if he hadn't had his cell phone. Instantaneous. That is the difference. And how can you do this in your classroom? Free tools. I connect with a class in Alabama every year. 2,500 kilometers away, but to the south this time, and in the same time zone, which makes like connecting very easy. Kids, when they hook up over a long distance, the synergistic relationships that happen create good math students. I had them working in Illuminate, which is basically an interactive whiteboard on both sides. So I'm writing here and they're writing there, and it's all happening simultaneously, and we're doing problem solving. The four fours. Can you use four fours to create every digit between 0 and 9? Right? 4 plus 4 minus 4 plus 4. 0. Yeah, I got the first one. Right? Now make all the rest of the digits. So if you're bored, that's your job to do today. Can you make all the digits between 0 and 9 using just four fours? Cisco has the best ads. Fourteen-year-olds crowded around the board. Okay, they actually act like that. Okay, I had that going. I had a Skype cast going at the same time, but they were huddled around the board trying to see what was going on down there, and vice versa. The energy in the room. It's problem solving today, kids. And all of a sudden now, through the same problem that would have been done that day, the energy magnified itself. So here's your new classroom. Yeah, we're still in rows, but look who's in your rows. All of your social networking tools. 100% free, with the exception of the iPhone, which, you know, is $199 on June 11th. So let's think about photography for a minute here. You know, Coke ads, good times, and Kodak created this for them before, you know, Polaroid got them. I've got Flickr in the top there, and I'm going to ask you to do an experiment. So if you have a cell phone, you might want to take it out. Okay, that was then, this is now. They're even using, okay? They're even using they. Everybody's using cell phones. They are us. So I'm going to tell you how easy this is, how easy you can do this, okay? You can take a picture on your cell phone, send it through the Ethernet, and have it housed at a certain place, and it's there, okay? I'm going to give you my Flickr account that you can send this to. I can't do it because my roaming charges, since I'm from Canada, that one picture would cost like the same amount as a flight down here, because there's 30 million of us, and our cell phone rates are just disgustingly huge. So here's what I want you to do. Take a picture of somebody in this room or of yourself, and I want you to send it to that address. You don't have to, but you can. Okay? And this is, once again, free. So take a picture, and you really need to do this, or my last slide's going to really be butchered. Just, I need at least one, because there's only me up there right now. Okay? So you take your picture, you go send, you type in that email address, because you guys are probably quicker at, you know, like using your thumbs and moving things around. And what's going to happen is I've created a slideshow of all of our pictures. And if you want to do this anytime you're in one of my sessions, send it to that address. How is this of benefit to you? Every kid has a cell phone. If you want them to keep track of something that they've done really interesting in their class, take a picture of it. Now, they don't have to upload it to Flickr, but they could take it off their phone and put it onto a hard drive at school. You now have 30 digital cameras in these kids' pockets, and you haven't paid a cent. Okay, they're 1.3 megapixel pictures. Okay, but they're taking a picture of a math assignment or something for a portfolio. It's in their pockets. Do you have that address? I should have superimposed it on the next slide. Isn't it? We good? I can go back at the end. So how can you do this? And there's some neat things that you can do with Flickr. Darren, since he's a genius, gets his kids to go out and find everyday objects and talk about, he teaches pre-Cal math, all the way up to AP Calc, which is first year university math in Canada. And each one of these little squares here are different things that this kid has figured out about their math assignment. Very easily done. It takes 2 seconds, just like you highlight something and then you just type in what's happening. He's using their technology, their phones, their everything to get the job done. Here's another one of a picture of a kid's house. The one that freaked me out, those are blinds. You know, like the regular blinds in your house? Kids figuring out, like, well, I forget what it was. I think it was like cosine law or wave law or something. Math that I haven't done since I left grade 8 math, because like grade 8 math, I nail. Grade 9 math, I'm good. Grade 10, I got to learn all over again. But they've got math in this. And if I had actually clicked on the hot boxes there, but then it took away from the picture. So I just... blinds and math, right?
The blinds will be merely a number in some file buffer. Instead of going out and buying things,
so I'll put there in 5,000 copies. You will go to the dollar market, describe your interest, your needs, your problem, and say, I'm working now on a ship in a real estate. I know that it's been a ship. I'm qualified in German, and I am a good mathematician. They said, they'll be right over. And they at once Xerox, with the help of computers in the libraries of the world, all the latest material just for you personally, not as something that you put on the bookshelf. They send you the package as a direct personal service. This is where we're headed under electronic information product.
Can't believe he's almost Nostradamus-like. Here he is in 1960, I think this was 65 or 66, talking about how you're going to get all this stuff Xeroxed to you, right? I want to be an expert in this. Boom, click, click, click. Probably wasn't click, click, click back then, but you made a telephone call and all of a sudden it arrives. in a nice glossy mail envelope. Well, that's Google, right? I want to know this. Click, you know, 253,159 hits, right? And then if you get really good, you get that down to 1,000, right? It's arrived. You know, we need to come up with activities that take that teenager right there in that, right there, and want to work, right? You want to be able to have something that creates an innate want, okay? Light something underneath their butt to make them want to do this. And by using their tools and the things that they do, you're going to be able to do that, okay? Change is here. They've embraced it, okay? All of you with cell phones, you're halfway there, right? The change is here, okay? The world is shrinking. Things you can do. I call them unprojects. Minimal work, or sorry, make them do math content of some kind, but then let them express it to you in any way. If you've ever done reading responses or anything, just tell me what you know about fractions. They have to write, I call it parent information, you know, the straight math facts from a textbook, you know, the rules that they need to know, the concepts that they need to know, and then now go play. Kid used The Sims to talk about percents. Made a 4-minute movie, all in his own time. This is Darren's, for those of you that teach high school, all of his kids, it's called Developing Expert Voices, okay? And they do amazing stuff at the high school level, the same idea. You need to take 3 problems and explain it so that a novice, a master, a novice, an apprentice, and a master understand what you're talking about. This year, the big change for us was kids brought their Xboxes into school. What? Xbox in school? They did their own projects on math. This is Darren's, and it's a story about conics, I think. Yes, it's a video game, and they've recorded the video game, but all of the audio dubbing is talking about mathematics and conics. I told my kids that, and my kids are always up to a challenge, and here we have, I think it's Super Smash Brothers, and they're talking about fractions. Yes, that's a video game, okay? These are boys, video game, boys, math. Who would have thunk it? Okay? Medium is anything from which change can emerge. Kids are hardwired. That could be you. Now, I think I finish with a little Gloria Gaynor. I think that's what the next slide is, and then I'll be done. But I think it's a 2-minute song, so I won't put the mic up to it. You'll be able to hear. Done by a kid. The first time I saw this, there were 15,000 hits at YouTube. It's over 300,000 hits now, or 300,000 views. It's called I Will Derive. Has anybody seen that? I Will Derive? Ugh. See? Everything new is old already. Anyways. Way back to Newton, that's alive and sense of problems just like this.
much I know. I've got a fine acceleration, set it equal to zero. Now if I only knew what the function was for A, I guess I'm gonna have to solve for some way. So I thought back to calculus, way back to Newton and to Leibniz and to problems just like this. And just like that, when I had given up on hope, I said no. There's just one way to find that slope, and so now I will derive, find the derivative of velocity with respect to time. It's as easy as can be, just have to take EBET. I will derive, I will derive. So I thought back to calculus, way back to Newton and to Leibniz and to problems just like this. And just like that, when I had given up all hope, I said no. There's just one way to find that slope, and so now I will derive, find the derivative of exposition with respect to time. It's as easy as can be, just have to take the XAT. I will derive, I will derive, I will derive.
So there you have a kid. Lots of math information. Now that's professional grade. I'm sure he was probably in an AV class at the same time. But that's a lot of math and that's a lot of work. And you know, for some of my colleagues back home, they only give marks out for tests. I think that kid knows how to derive. Now if we've done this properly, and I scooch down here, hopefully all of your pictures, if you took any and sent them, nope, didn't work. Should have been right here. So, yay technology. But I do have the power to change that, and I will towards the end. But nothing I use in my classroom costs a red cent, with the exception of the broadband, which the school division pays for anyways. Okay, it can be done for free. Kids do it at home, and give them a chance. So, thank you. Go have coffee.
Could everyone receive a label? You have until 10 at the breakout sessions. The vendor fair is next door. Your raffle pieces are in there. Coffee.